One of the things that's happened to us all in marketing, sales, biz dev, all of these places is that we've had such massive advancements in technology, and there's so many tools and there's so many measurement tools. Just do a Google search for marketing analytics and just watch what happens. And I think that's great. And I think those tools are a wonderful sort of complement to what we do. But the bottom line is, you know, when I think about whether it's a community or I think about networking, people who were good at networking back in the 90s and the 80s, they were good at networking. They would go to a lot of events. They would create a lot of content. They would hand out a lot of cards. They would meet a lot of people. They would shake a lot of hands. The principles are exactly the same.
The smartest marketers from all walks of life, in every industry, talking about the latest trends, opportunities, and challenges. Insights from marketing executives at organizations like National Geographic, IBM, and the Baltimore Ravens. And tips from business authors and experts known around the world. Ways to improve your community's marketing, starting now, right here on the Marketing Smarts Podcast.
Well, Marketing Smarts listeners, I'm super excited, as always. But I have to ask, are you excited about partners or partner communities? Or have you ever thought about building a partner community? Well, today in this episode, we're going to talk about build a partner community for B2B marketing and sales success. And of course, we've got Frank Belzer on today. Of course, we're going to talk about what keeps him up at night. We're going to talk about getting started, hurdles along the way, words of wisdom, and so much more about partner communities. And there is some great examples in here as well. Now, Frank Belzer is an international business development expert based in Orlando. He is currently the chief sales and marketing officer at Icon Park. And prior to that, he was SVP of sales for Universal Parks and Resorts during a time of unprecedented growth from 2014 until the end of 2020. He oversaw all domestic and international sales strategies. His oversight at Universal included managing all trade partner relationships and all international business efforts for the park and hotels. He is on the board of Experience Kismi and served as a board member and advisor to the Grand Canyon Resort Corporation. There is a long list of things that I could go on to say, a pedigree, if you will, for Frank, but you'll quickly see how his brain works and how it might help you. But before we get into the good stuff, let's go ahead and hear a word from our sponsor. Are you looking for great curated content specific to you, the B2B marketer? Want to have fun while also learning valuable information to help you succeed on a daily basis? Then you're in luck. Look no further. This week's Marketing Smarts podcast is brought to you by the Marketing Smarts Live Show. That's right. You can join us live every Monday where we shine the spotlight on you, the community members, share fresh B2B news, several top-notch curated articles to help you be a better marketer, and of course, have tons of fun along the way. If you want even more B2B marketing education with the ability to ask questions and engage with the rest of the audience, tune in every Monday at 10 a.m. Eastern for the Marketing Smarts Live Show. You won't regret the additional B2B learning you'll be adding to your life. Now, let's get back to this episode of the Marketing Smarts Podcast. All right, Marketing Smarts listeners, with that out of the way, you know what it's time for: building a partner community for B2B marketing and sales success with Frank Belzer. Let's get into the good stuff. All right, Marketing Smarts listeners, it's your boy George B. Thomas, and I'm back, and of course, you know what I'm going to say? Do you? That's right. I'm super excited because today we're going to take this conversation into, well, a place that maybe we haven't taken it before. We're going to talk about build a partner community. Now, there's a key word in there. I hope you heard it. Partner community for B2B marketing and sales success. Oh my gosh, are we actually aligning stuff on this episode too? We'll see. But I am super excited because I have Frank Belzer here with me today. Frank, how are you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful. You're getting me all excited already. It's great.
You know, we have that effect on the Marketing Smarts podcast. We just like to get people excited, be excited, and education should be fun. But you know what, Frank? I have this curious question that I like to start with on the podcast, and it has really brought in some interesting answers over the historical asking of it. And that is, what keeps Frank up at night? pertaining to partner communities. And by the way, is it a dream? Is it a nightmare? Marketing Smarts listeners want to know.
Well, I think I'm going to put that question in the past tense because I'm currently not in this process of developing or working on one, but it was my life's work at Universal. I mean, I was devoted to getting this thing up and running over a four-year time period, and we had, 700 resellers with multiple employees amongst every one of those 700 resellers that we were trying to reach. And I think the thing that was the most stressful for me was just this question of, by nature, a community is made up of diversity. You've got people of all different levels in a company. You've got people with all different roles in the company. You want to engage with all of them. They're in all different markets and different countries, working for different type of organizations. How do you resonate? How the goal is to engage with all of these people. How do you know you're doing that? How do you create something that's so broad, but also so specific at the same time? I think that was the number one thing that probably stressed me out the most, was I would see things come across my desk that were part of the execution or the work or the content, and I would look at it and scratch my head and go, I don't know if that's going to resonate with enough people. I don't know if that's really going to do what we're trying to do.
I love this, and we'll get back to that idea of kind of how do we know? And it sounds like nightmare sweats, by the way, the answer to that one. So here's the thing. Let's kind of level set because, again, community, Frank, it's become all the buzzword in a lot of the marketing spaces. And so I want to really define the difference between what a typical marketer or B2B marketer might call a community fan base versus a partner community in what we're talking about today. So kind of maybe talk about the differences.
Yeah, I think so. A consumer community, that's pretty straightforward. You're trying to reach out to in the theme park business for us, it would be annual pass holders. It would be customers who are just walking in, planning a vacation. It's a little more direct. You're hitting first level. You're talking right to that person. But with partners or with sales channels or resellers, it's a lot different because now you're trying to actually go through that channel and reach the people who are then selling, hoping that those people who are selling will reach those consumers at the very end. So there's two or three steps along the way where your engagement could go wrong. And that was my point, I think, in the last question was, it wouldn't be enough to just engage with the ownership, for example, of all of your partners or resellers. That's nice, but that's not going to move the needle. What about the management level? Well, that's still nice. You want those people involved, but really what you're trying to do is you're trying to engage with the management, you're trying to engage with the management team and the executive, and also with the front line, with the people who are working on your product or selling your product or supporting your product. So it's a lot more challenging, I think, than a consumer community. Getting the B2B community right has got a lot more nuance and there's a lot more complexity to getting that to work for you.
It's interesting. I want to go off the beaten path for a second, Frank, because as I listened to you answer that, the word enablement came to my brain. And I'm like, man, it sounds like Frank is saying, sure, the owner, great, management, great, team, great. And what we need to do is be able to enable them to do it as good as we're doing it in-house. Like, talk us through that a little bit and what that kind of looks like.
Yeah, I mean, that was the goal for day one for me, because this whole project for me at Universal started with a regression analysis of our best customers. And what we started to learn was that our best sales channels, a couple common things came out, right? A, we were engaged with multiple stakeholders across the company. B, when we mystery shopped them, we had great frontline adoption. They knew our product. They understood how to position us. And we had numerous contacts on the middle management level, which meant that working with them was easy. So we saw these commonalities and we said, God, if we could replicate that across all 700 partners, if we could replicate what makes the overperformers so great of a partner, wouldn't that be wonderful? And so that was the goal from the beginning, was how do we, in some cases when we audited these clients, we had great relationships with the front line. They loved our product. They loved talking about us. But we didn't have a strong relationship in the middle and at the top. And then we had others that were completely the opposite. So the goal of this community from the outset was, how do we connect with each of these different groups with, of course, the end goal being enabling people to better sell our product and better position our product. And I also think that's a difference between the sort of consumer approach and the B2B approach. On the consumer side, your people are going to tell you, oh, it's just about engagement. We just want to engage. We don't want to solicit. We don't want to have any conversion metrics. But let's be honest. When you start a partner community, Yes, engagement is top of mind. It's a goal. But the outcome at the end of the day, if it doesn't pay for itself, if it doesn't create numbers, then you're going to be in a rough situation. So you can be a little more direct that, hey, we're doing this so that we can drive the business.
I love that. I love that so much. And I think understanding there is that set of differences. And Frank, I'm usually a guy, I like to see both sides of the coin, right? I want to know what I'm kind of playing with. And also, I try to put my mindset into the Marketing Smarts listeners. And if I'm at the very beginning of this and I'm like, okay, I saw the title, Build a Partner Community for B2B Marketing, Sales, and Marketing Success. I clicked on it because I'm getting ready to start a journey. Do I have to build this from scratch, right? And what I'm asking here is, what are there, not if what, but are there some similarities between the two, community and partner community? Or because maybe I already have like the engaged community, right? The fans-based community. Or is building a partner community like starting from scratch?
I do think it's a different animal, and I'm going to be honest here. When I started, I'm going to give myself a pat on the back. I think one of the best things I did was I had this piece of art that I put on the wall, and it was basically a very sort of cheesy, cartoonish drawing of a typical community. It was like a village, and it had a coffee shop, it had a gas station, it had a church, it had another church, it had a school. And my whole message to the team was, this is what a community looks like. It's made up of all these different components, and the most beautiful communities that we know, when we think about a beautiful community, what do we say? Well, it's got great schools. Oh, it's got great coffee shops. Oh, it's got good private businesses. It's very diverse. It's very artsy. It's got access to the highways. There's a list of criteria for us with our typical neighborhood and slash community that we look for. And so that for me became sort of the straw man for like, what is this partner community going to look like? Because we have all these differences, but we're going to bring people together around this sort of common purpose. And the beauty of the B2B community is you get to dictate what that purpose is. You're building the community. So as the founder of the community, you get to set the vision. And for us, the commonality was these are all people who are involved in helping people make travel decisions. These are all companies who resell travel in one form or another. So by that definition, they moved into this community. And not everybody went to the same church. Not everybody went to the same coffee shop. Not everybody walked their dog in the same park. But we brought them together around this common purpose. And I think that's really, if you don't lay the groundwork correctly on what your vision is for the community and what your expectations are, you're going to get sucked into sort of what I sort of call this technology hell of the vendor who's providing the platform dictating to you what a community should look like. And they're really building a community around their technology, not the other way around. So I think it's really important to have a very clear idea of what does our community look like.
Yeah, there might be a rewind spot right there about that whole technology hell and building it based on a platform instead of on what you need. Yeah, Marketing Smarts listeners, maybe just rewind. I do, however, Frank, want to go off the beaten path again, because I love when you're painting the picture of like there's a church and there's a shop and it's all these different kind of people. And what came into my brain is, yeah, but this community has what they need, which when I think about the humans, what that does is it means they're happy and it's maybe even like this kind of harmonious place, right? Frank, how do you make sure that your partners are happy and harmonious?
You've got to get them to like staying in the community, not to go to the nearby town, right? Not to go to the neighboring town. You want them to stay within the community. So one of the things we focused on was measuring engagement, and we tried to create almost a platform where people could, you know, as I looked at other successful sort of things that we're using in this modern age, you know, we have, if we buy something on Amazon, we get to offer a suggestion. But also, if you have a question on Amazon, you can ask a question about, hey, did anyone have trouble with this? You know, and we've got a lot of places like that now. Yelp can do that. So there's this interaction that happens. So from the very beginning, we pushed trying to get our members to help feed the funnel, right? So we wanted people to talk, not just, it was three-way communication was the goal. It wasn't just about us talking to our resellers, and it wasn't just about our resellers talking to us. We also wanted to encourage reseller-to-reseller communication. That was really, really a lot of fun. We did things like you're doing here, where we would interview resellers from other markets and have them share tips. We really got people into this idea of, hey, let's all help each other. I'm selling in Mexico, you're selling in the UK. It's really not competitive, but let's talk about what are some of the best practices we're doing, and maybe we can help each other. So it's about really getting those people to connect with your community. So that's hard to develop that.
Yeah, but I love that idea of being like the great connector, right? And I also love the fact that you brought up this just idea of, I want to say, almost being the catalyst for these individuals one-on-one, but then helping them be the catalyst for each other. It's so amazing. All right, so let's back up a little bit so that we can shoot forward in the next couple questions, because my fear is that we have somebody that clicks on this, they haven't started yet, they really don't even know what we mean by a partner community. So when we say, and when I say we, I really mean you, Frank, because I'm interviewing the expert right here. When you say partner community, what the heck do we really even mean? In other words, how do we define what is a, and in this case, I'm going to throw B2B in front of it because of the Marketing Smarts listeners, but a B2B partner community, what is it?
So the way I sort of described it, and it was, and I could talk a little bit about how some of the pushback we got from other places when we did this, but it's basically a gated portal that works as sort of an intranet or an internal Facebook type of platform. And we were trying to do a couple things. We wanted to have availability to training within that platform so people could learn about different products. We wanted to have availability to various pieces of thought leadership, some things within the industry that would help our all-in-one-place kind of thing. We wanted to share news about things that were happening at our different campuses and different parks and different divisions and groups and any reorgs that we were doing. And we wanted to have assets available for them to download and so on and so forth. And just general business tips, too, on how you might position this product or how you might sell this ticket or why this. So we had all of these different aspects, and we wanted them also to be able to look at their performance. We wanted them to be able to go in at different tiers and know how they were doing as far as rankings would go. And so then we tried to create gamification aspects to it too, which of course is challenging, but badges for engagement and badges for certification and badges for reaching different levels. But basically that's it. It's a place where your collective resellers, whatever they might be, whether they're travel agencies or OTAs or whether they're hardware stores, whether they're network and IT providers, whatever they are, it's a place where they can come together based on their familiarity and their commonality around selling your product and working with your product. And it's a place for you then to provide whatever it is that you think those partners need. If your business was different, I assume some of what you might be offering would be different than what I offered on our community. That's basically it, but this sort of gated, fenced area for them to go and get a little something extra than they would get from the regular website.
So good. Marketing Smarts listeners, dare I say that Frank just gave us a blueprint when it comes to community elements, education, news, thought leadership, assets, general tips, and the ability for the members or the community to see their performance, ranking, gamification. Again, mark that down and figure out how you customize that for your business and your business needs for your partner program. Now, here's the thing, Frank. I want to actually go off the beaten path for a third time because you alluded, you teased me, Frank. You said, and I can talk about the pushback. What the heck was the pushback?
Tactical sessions, inspirational keynotes, off-the-clock antics. And let's not forget about immeasurable connections. What am I talking about? The B2B Forum, of course. For more than 15 years, the B2B Forum has been the conference where today's leading B2B marketers gather for insights, networking, and laughs. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's never too early to plan for success. Join us in 2023 in October for inspiration from B2B marketing experts, and I mean those marketers who walk the walk and know how to talk the talk in a way that you can understand. Get access to real-world actionable insights on the tactics and tools that work today and strategies that stand the test of time. When you say, well, on October 4th, you can join us for the B2B Forum full-day workshop for all access attendees. And on the 5th and 6th, well, spectacular conference shenanigans. That's right. If you head over to the B2B Forum website right now, you can sign up to join us October 4th through the 6th for some amazing education. And guess what? I'll see you next year at the B2B Forum. That's right. I'll be there. Will you?
There is, and I don't know if the listeners from every vertical or every segment will relate to this, but there is a tendency in B2B across the board for people to There's always an element within any company that prefers direct business over business that comes through sales channels. Mark Benioff and Brian Halligan, so Mark Benioff from Salesforce and Brian Halligan from HubSpot are two men that I really admired because Brian, of course, imitated Mark. But when Mark started Salesforce, he opened up his API and he opened up the idea of selling through channels. By doing that, they were the fastest growing software company ever. Because he knew that by working with partners, he could provide a level of service and a level of capability and a level of support that his company wasn't ready to provide. And so there was lower attrition, et cetera. And HubSpot tried to model something very similar, and they also grew relatively quickly. So I always looked at that, and I had a very positive view of resellers. Additionally, my data told me that resellers, on average, sold better product, they sold longer trips, they sold my premium products, they sold my ancillary product, their per caps, as we call them in the business, were higher than those from the direct side. So I had a plethora of reasons why we should be working on the trade business. But of course, you've always got elements in your company who don't want to do that, who think it's better to sell direct and automatically assume that direct is more profitable than indirect business. So a lot of the pushback came from those elements, like we're going to spend more money on doing something with these partners. Aren't your people already doing that? Why do they need these resources? Can't you just send this via email? Can't you just do this on a free platform? So that was all the pushback that we got. Not to mention that, you know, as with anyone, the IT stack was getting higher, and this involved an element of IT, and they weren't really super keen on now doing something that involved working with all these different partners and the potential complexities that that has as well.
So much good stuff in this interview. Marketing Smarts listeners, I hope that you are paying attention. Now, let's shoot forward. I said we're kind of going to set and shoot forward. So how should B2B marketers get started, right? That's the hardest part in anything in life. It's just getting started. So how can they get started with building a partner community that drives B2B marketing and sales success, Frank?
I think it's real simple. I think the first step is to understand if your market wants it. If you're in one of those channels where people don't see a benefit, it's maybe a commodity sale, it's maybe really fast, there's not much additional value that you're going to provide, maybe you don't need one. But if you're selling a product that's a little more complex, if you're not the lowest priced product on the shelf, if you've got nuances or value adds that you want people to understand, or if there are competitive issues that really need to be clarified, if you're in that space, I think it's reaching out to customers, talking to some of your key stakeholders and key customers and finding out, hey, what kind of things would you like to see in a portal like this? And what aren't we giving you now? And is anyone else giving you a portal like this? It was amazing to me that I started on this thing, and within a few months, sure enough, there was a portal from my competitor down the street being worked on. You might ask your customers and they might say, oh yeah, we're already doing something like that with so-and-so. They've already got that kind of platform. But because these things are gated, you don't see them. They're not public. So you might already be behind the eight ball, and you might already not have a community, and your partner might already have a community, and you're thinking that you're losing sales or market share, and you're thinking, oh, it's because of price, or oh, it's because of this, or oh, it's because of that. And the reality might be that your competitor is over-engaging with the reseller, and it's pushing you back down, you know, sort of the priority list.
Love it so much. Now, I know we talked about community elements as far as the direction of education, news, the thought leadership, things like that. But I still do want to ask the question, because I think there's probably about 4,000 or 5,000 different ways you could go at this question. And that is, what are some key elements to and I'll use the word great in front of this, actually, a great partner community that B2B marketers should be paying attention to as they move forward?
I think it checks all the boxes with connecting with all of the relevant positions, relative markets and companies that you're trying to connect with. I mean, that's part one. Part two is usage. If you've built it and people are not using it and not going on, you kind of have to discipline yourself to make it the outlet. You can't maintain the old way of sending out everything via Dropbox. It has to be like, go to the community. New assets are available on the community. You have to have everybody on your team pushing people towards the community. And we actually created a metric around engagement for companies. So we would go to someone and find out, how many employees do you think should be on this community? And they might say, well, it's our entire sales team and our entire marketing team, all of these biz dev people, and then the managers of our retail outlets. Okay, how many people is that? Oh, 322. That 322 would go into the metric, and we would want to know how we were doing out of the 322 people that should be engaged. How are we doing? And we would share that number with our partners. The other element would be, once you have people in there using it, how do you leverage it to drive returns and results? And we would have partners come to us and say, hey, we want to do a marketing campaign with you. We'd like you to spend some money doing this and this. And I would say, well, hold on, how's their community engagement? Well, only 10% of their people are trained. And out of those 322 people, only 15 people have logged on. Well, you know what, George? Why don't you take some time first, before we do something together, why don't you work on that so that I know your people are trained and I know that you're using the right assets and I know that you understand our product, and then we'll come back to you with a plan. How does that sound? That's how you really use the community to change the business later. So I think those are maybe four things that you got to work on.
Yeah, so smart, so smart. So I fully understand this next question and what I'm about to say. It dates me. I think it dates me. People will get it. Like, I love the show Mythbusters. Man, I can sit and watch like episode after episode and maybe two or three times. I love the way that it was created. I love what they're doing here. And so one of the things I like to do on the Marketing Smarts podcast is just bust some myths, right? So when you think about that, what is a common myth about partner communities that you want to use this day? The time that we're spending together, like, George, I just want to debunk that.
Yeah, I think one of the myths is that partners already have too many things to log on to and too many things to do, and they're not going to engage with it. I heard that a lot before doing it. You know, they've already got Facebook, they've already got this, they've already got apps, they don't want another platform. Well, it turns out they kind of do want another platform. So that's one thing. Another myth is that you're not going to get people to use it in the way you're thinking that they're going to use it. And that's also a myth, because that really comes down to how you manage. It's like any other process that your company launches, right? I mean, you might have a product that you sell that requires someone to take a certain level of training or to have a certain license or to have a certain certification. And nobody says those things aren't going to work, because guess what? It becomes part of your practice. And if you treat the community as this is how we communicate with our partners and how we want our partners to communicate with us. If you really live it, then there will be results. And the final one, I think, is that there's no ROI. I do think there's an ROI from having an engaged, now I'll caveat that with, it has the potential to have no ROI, but so does everything. And everything we invest in, everything we do has the potential to have no ROI. The ROI, though, comes from how you manage it, right? So I think the community, although it's a technology, although it's a platform, and although the people who are building it for you are going to talk to you about all these great features that they have and everything's automated and algorithm-based, guess what? You still got to manage it. There's no such thing as self-serve, set it and forget it with a community. It requires investments of time for it to really work.
So I love that. Time, money. It makes me start to think about, like, you have to be passionate about the community and the success of the community and the people that are in it. So, Frank, what are some hurdles that you've seen marketers, or actually it could not even be marketers, but we're talking to marketers today, but what are some hurdles you've seen people face when trying to do partner community or partner communities?
I think one of the biggest ones that I ran into was that most of the platforms that work well for this are not necessarily the prettiest. And as marketing people, we love creative flash and draw, you know, we love some GIF and we love some B-roll and we want some, and it's not like a website. It's not trying to impress people with flash. You're not trying to capture people's attention who don't know who you are. So I think that's one of the big things. You got to get out of your own way with all of that. It really is a functional product. And I think you have to really think about that. I think the other hurdles are, whatever platform you go with, in order for it to really be effective. So for example, I wanted this platform we had to, when someone downloaded assets, when someone finished training, I wanted the rep who was the account manager for that account to get notified. Hey, someone's just downloaded assets. Hey, someone's just completed training. Now, in order for that compatibility to happen with, you know, I had Salesforce as a CRM, and I went with the Salesforce community because those two things could talk to each other, which is great. But I also want this talking to my ERP. I want this talking to my website. How does it connect with all of the other internal silos that you have? That's another hurdle. You could end up building something that isn't able to offer your partners really what they want because of a connectivity issue.
Oh, man. The Frankenstein and the ability to connect it. And ladies and gentlemen, please don't fall prey to any of those hurdles now that they've been diagnosed for you. Again, sides of a coin, right? I talk about the hurdles, the problems, the difficulties. But how do we know what success looks like? What does partner community nirvana look like, Frank?
Well, the way I had this, I had two pie charts. One was out of all of the partners, which is close to 700, how many of them as partners were engaged? And then I had rankings for by partner, how many of their people were engaged. So in some cases, you had partners who had teams that were as many as 50 other partners combined. So you wanted to know, out of your big partners especially, how are we doing there with overall engagement? But you also wanted to know globally, how are we doing with all of the partners total? So those are the two things. I think it really is about, you know, when you think about the word engagement is probably overused. I probably overused it too much even today. But that's really what success for a community comes down to. And you have to believe that the people who are passionate, who know more, who understand more about your product, who have your product top of mind, you have to believe that those people are going to do a better job helping you to sell your product. You tracking that by person is very, very difficult. So there's a little bit of faith that you have to have. But, you know, as marketers, we're used to that because a lot of what we do in marketing is an act of faith, right? We believe this will resonate with our customers. So we go with this slogan or we go with this piece of content. And I think a community is the same thing. It's about knowing that I put the right stuff out there. If people are engaging, the end result will be that the numbers will start to lift. But I'm not going to focus entirely on that because there's a lag time there. I'm going to focus on the engagement quotient the most.
Man, so much going around in my brain of like the lag time. I start to think about the echo, right? You're speaking out to your community. You might not immediately know what's coming back. And you mentioned ROI earlier and the fact that sometimes it's hard to measure, but that doesn't mean it's not there. Hopefully, Marketing Smarts listeners, you're picking up these breadcrumbs of things that you need to be thinking about when it comes to building a partner community. Frank, oh, you got something to say?
Well, I was just saying, you know, we've done that to ourselves a little bit too, right? We've been so focused over the past, ever since, you know, in this digital era, we've been so focused on attribution. And there's nothing that pleases a marketer more than going into the executive team and putting up a slide and showing return on ad spend of or click-through rates of. And we just sort of got so excited, sort of, you know, petting ourselves on the head for having these metrics that come through digital. And we've created an environment now where in corporate America, it can be very difficult to sell a marketing campaign that's a little more visceral, that's a little more about feel and engagement, because we've created this environment of like attribution, like, well, show me the attribution numbers. How are we going to track this? So we've done it to ourselves. We have to slowly wean, I think, leadership away from that a little bit, because it is going to be hard sometimes to direct like attribution number to some of these programs.
Yep. I'm glad that we got that out there. So, Frank, what are some words of wisdom that you want to share with the Marketing Smarts listeners? And it could be, let's be honest, it could be about partner communities. It could be about just communities in general, marketing. Hey, maybe even life. What are the words of wisdom that you want to leave folks with?
One of the things that's happened to us all in marketing, sales, biz dev, all of these places is that we've had such massive advancements in technology and there's so many tools and there's so many measurement tools. Just do a Google search for marketing analytics and just watch what happens. And I think that's great. And I think those tools are a wonderful sort of complement to what we do. But the bottom line is, you know, when I think about whether it's a community or I think about networking, people who were good at networking back in the 90s and the 80s, they were good at networking. They would go to a lot of events. They would create a lot of content. They would hand out a lot of cards. They would meet a lot of people. They would shake a lot of hands. The principles are exactly the same as we have with social networking. If you were a good networker in the 80s, if you have that mindset about getting to know about other people, and then it works with these platforms. And so I think one thing is, you know, don't forget about the customer. Don't forget about the fundamentals and the basics. You know, we have decades of consumer research out there that proves how people feel and what people like. And many times the data that you're going to get from a lot of the analytics tools, it's measuring what can be measured, but that doesn't mean that's all that is happening or all that is measurable out there. So don't forget to sort of think about the customer and think about what you're really trying to do. Don't get hung up too much and don't let the technology become your strategist. I guess that's the bottom line.
So, Marketing Smarts listeners, did you take lots of notes? I have to ask, what is your hashtag one thing? Your number one execution opportunity after this podcast. Make sure you reach out and let us know in my inbox or on Twitter using the hashtag
MPB2B. Also, I have to ask, are you a free member of the Marketing Profs community yet? If not, head over to mprofs.com/MP today. You won't regret the additional B2B marketing education you'll be adding to your life. Hey, listeners, we'd like it if you could leave us a rating or review on your favorite podcast app, but we'd love it if you'd share this episode with a coworker or friend. Until we meet in the next episode of the Marketing Smarts podcast, where we talk with Bonnie Crater about a B2B marketer's guide to marketing attribution, what you, and actually me too, it was a great interview, need to know, I hope you do just a couple of things. One, reach out and let us know what conversation you'd like to listen in on next. Two, focus on getting 1% better at your craft each and every day. And finally, remember to be a happy, helpful, humble B2B marketing human, and we'll see you in the next episode of the Marketing Smarts Podcast.